Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
And we'd like to thank everybody for joining us again for the Footballers Family Podcast. And I got a special guest. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, man. My name is Marcus Ogden. I'm a former NFL athlete. I actually played for the Tennessee Titans, along with the Jacksonville Jaguars, Ravens, and Bills. I live now in Fuquay, Berea, North Carolina, right outside of Raleigh.
Well, you're just down the road several hours, but you're right down the road.
Yeah, you know, like, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 hours, somewhere around there.
There's not a fast way to get to North Carolina from Tennessee. You just have to drive.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, what I do is I would sometimes play poker at the Indian Reservation Casino in North Carolina. You drive as far west as you can in the state, go through the Smoky Mountains, all that kind of stuff, and then about 10 or 15 minutes past the casino is the Tennessee line.
The Cherokee, North Carolina.
You got it.
It's beautiful there.
Oh, it's amazing.
It's beautiful. Good people out there, too. I went out there several years ago. But one thing about the Footballers Family, Marcus, is I like to know why you like football. But I'm going to leave this open to you. You tell me your football story, and then we can go from there.
So I ended up playing football starting as a freshman at St. John's College High School, Washington, D.C. Was a two-year starter on JV. Tried out for varsity my sophomore year. Wasn't good enough to make the team. Went back down to JV. Went to play as a junior. I was not starting at offensive line. And to make it worse, my brother, Jonathan Ogden, was drafted that year in 1996 as the number 4 pick overall. Went Keyshawn Johnson, Kevin Hardy, Simeon Rice, Jonathan Ogden. So that in itself was just even more like, oh. So I almost quit football because I was so mad at my coach. Like, how dare you not start me all that? So I told my dad I was quitting football. My dad said, okay, son, I'm going to love you no matter what. But understand this. You're going to feel good today, tomorrow, maybe a week from now. But at some point, you're going to be like, why did I quit? How good could I have been? What could football have done for me? So I said, all right, went back to my coach, said, oh, yeah, Marcus, you didn't come to practice yesterday? That's okay. You were starting at D tackle, but because of your attitude and your baby ways, I'm putting you now on the second team. So you need to get your butt here, work your way up the ladder, and you'll be starting by the time of the regular season, which I did. And then I had played both ways as a senior in high school. Then at the last second, Jeremy, I got a full scholarship offer to play for Howard University and the Bison in Washington, D.C. Oh, by the way, my dad was a Howard Bison player in the 1960s and 70s. So the bloodline continued. And it was great. Phenomenal. I was like, oh, if I get a year or two, whatever, that's great. You know, free education. Four-year starter. I ended up being drafted into the National Football League. I was actually the first, and I'm still to date the only offensive lineman drafted into the National Football League from Howard University.
Yeah.
And I'm in Howard University's Athletic Hall of Fame, and my dad and I are the only father-son in their 144-year history that a father-son is in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Howard is not known as a football, powerhouse in the sense of drafting. For you to come out, 6th-round pick, correct? Mm-hmm. For you to come out of Howard has to say something about what you were able to do.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I went to the All-Star game that year, the Hula Bowl. Played against guys from Florida State, Miami, Rice, Texas, Chapel Hill. My head coach was Mac Brown, actually had just won the year. He won it the next year. He won it the next year. He was at Texas, so he was the national champion that next year with Vince Young. And because Vince was drafted in that draft, I believe, 06. I want to say 05, 06. So he ended up winning the national championship, I believe it was 04, the Rose Bowl with Vince, Michael Griffin, Bo Scaife, Jonathan Scott, all those powerhouses in Texas. So I got to the Hula Bowl, right, Jeremy? And I ended up having a great week of practice. The guy that I ended up blocking all week with no sacks, no pressures, no hurries, had 4 sacks in the game against the other team, playing against tackles like Jordan Black, who was actually a 4th-round draft pick out of Notre Dame to the Chiefs. He played against him. My good buddy Brett Romberg, who was the center for the Hurricanes at the time, played with Ken Dorsey. So I had a really great showing at the Hula Bowl, and that got me to get drafted by the Jacksonville Jaguars and Jack Del Rio.
Yeah, I'm not going to hold that against you being drafted by the Jaguars, especially after last season. I don't forget things. I don't forget year 2000 from the Ravens either. I don't. But you, coming out of Howard, I'm not familiar with Howard. Was it a option team or a power running team?
No, football. They threw the football.
They threw the football.
Oh, yeah. So my head coach was Steve Wilson, played for the Broncos and the Cowboys under Tom Landry. He was
I recognize the name. Yeah.
He's a cornerback. Steve was all aerial assault. I mean, he was big. I mean, he liked his quarterback 6'5", 6'6". My good friend Donald Clark came in with me at Howard, was 6'5". Bobby Towson, who was our quarterback for 2 years when I was starting right tackle as a freshman sophomore, was 6'6". Ted White, who came to the NFL for a little bit with the Patriots, was about 6'3", 6'4". So Steve believed in throwing the football all day long. Like, so at Howard, I got a lot of reps pass blocking in the MEAC against other teams like, Towson.
Yeah.
We also played the SWAC like Jackson State. We played Tennessee Southern, 1 year. So, I mean, it was real Arkansas Pine Bluff 1 year. So we really got a good mix of playing SWAC, MEAC, some other 1AA programs. We played some great stadiums like, Chicago Bears Stadium, Soldier Field, but before it got redone up, the Colt Stadium, on the turf. We got to play at Cincinnati Bengals, old Kirk Stadium when I was playing against like Bethune-Cookman. So it's interesting, right, Jeremy? I remember, so my draft class, we had, I believe, back in the 60s and the 70s era, right? Before they had all those rounds and all that stuff, right? And a lot of African Americans didn't go to predominantly white universities. We had, I think, the highest draft class of like Black college players in the modern era. So you had Drayden Florence, who was drafted in the 2nd round out of Tuskegee. Frank Walker, who got drafted 6th round to the Giants out of Tuskegee.
Yeah.
You had Vishante Shanko, who was drafted 3rd round to the Giants out of Morgan State. You had Rasheem Mathis drafted in the 2nd round out of Bethune-Cookman to the Jaguars. You had myself to the Jaguars. You had soon-to-be, I believe, Hall of Famer Robert Mathis drafted in the 5th round to the Colts.
That dude was a beast.
He had 26 sacks his senior year at Alabama A&M.
Holy cow.
26 sacks, right? And everybody said, oh, too small, too short, doesn't work. I mean, just not going to be able to make it as a DN.
Yeah.
Part of the 100 club sack group, right?
I watched him twice a year. He was not too small.
Oh, my God. Courtney Van Buren, O-tackle out of Arkansas Pine Bluff was my draft class to the Chargers, right tackle. I mean, we had, there was many of us that were drafted HBCUs. Zuriel Smith, wide receiver, went to the Redskins. So we had a lot of HBCU guys that year drafted to the National Football League and played for a year. I got almost 6 years in. I mean, Rasheem got, I think, 13. Robert got what, 10 or 11? There was some guy. Vishante got one to the Vikings and had a great career as a tight end with the Giants and the Vikings. I mean, we had some talent that year.
I remember Vishante Shanko. That dude went nuts about 4 or 5 years in a row. He was incredible. His hands and his feet, and from historically Black colleges. You don't get the publicity. You don't. It's not D1.
It's one double A. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Okay. Thank you for the correction.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly, and you might have to educate me on this, there was a, this was like in the 60s, late 60s, early 70s, for the Steelers, really brought the attention to historically black colleges. And if I remember correctly, somebody like John Stallworth started a ball rolling with that. And
who's a good guy, Jeremy? I want to make sure people are right to this, is my good friend James Shaq Harris. He was the first quarterback African-American to start an entire season with the Bills, played at Grambling under Eddie Robinson.
Oh, wow.
So he was like one of the first. So Alan Briscoe was the first African-American quarterback to start a game in the NFL. James Shaq Harris was the first African-American quarterback to start a season in the NFL for the Bills. So, you know, around, just like you said, like the 70s, you know, people like, you know, Shaq, and then you had people that start coming like Walter Payton out of Jackson State.
Yeah.
Right. John Stallworth. I mean, you started having some Harry Carson, went to Morgan State, right? Willie, having him and
LT on the same, in the same middle linebacker. Oh, gosh. That Giants right. team.
Willie Lanier,
yeah.
Morgan State.
Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. What I love about Willie and Lanier, of course, I've only been able to see video of him, is he was not just brute force. He was intelligence with speed and with force, and that was what made that Kansas City team so nasty.
Another great one, Deacon Jones.
Deacon Jones, yes.
NC State.
He's smacking that helmet.
the head slap, right?
So, and a late, I don't remember what draft.
Super late round pick.
Yeah.
Like 13th round, something like that.
Yeah, something like that, yeah. Mm-hmm. And he played for, if you're listening to this, Deacon Jones is the reason the word sack is used with the quarterback. It is Deacon Jones' invention, which doesn't surprise me at all.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so you had a lot of guys, man, Tennessee State, Jackson State, Grambling, I'll say the SWAC, that's the SWAC, the Southwest Athletic Conference, had more players, I believe, drafted in the 70s and 80s because of Eddie Robinson, Grambling, all that. And then the MEAC came in.
Richard Dent. My dad and my sister graduated from TSU. And I've got to learn a little bit about that. And if I remember correctly, was Ed Too Tall Jones from Tennessee?
Of course. Ed Too Tall Jones, Tennessee State. Yep.
Yeah. Tennessee State is one of those that, you know, where I live, it is, people love them. And if I remember correctly as well, Eddie George is the coach up there.
That is correct. And Eddie's an OSU guy, but he's done a great job bringing the guys in, and done a really nice job with recruiting, done a nice job with the program. Eddie's a great guy. As a matter of fact, I interviewed Eddie on my old podcast. Great guy. Just, you know, as a matter of fact, my brother and Eddie were in the same draft class.
Your brother and Eddie, and I don't want to talk about that too much, but your brother and Eddie had some wars, if I remember correctly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Tennessee playing against Baltimore, you know, Ray Lewis, you know, hitting Eddie George in the hole. Yep, great picture. Yep. And so, like, you know, I mean, but again, there was a lot of, you know, a lot of great battles won and played by both teams. But, yeah, I mean, the Titans, and, you know, it was just a lot, man. But, you know, the Black college really, really has come a long way with facilities and strength coaches and conditioning and, you know, all that stuff. So I'm excited to see, you know, I mean, Dion did a really nice job for us coming into Black College, Jackson State. I don't have any ill will against him going to Colorado. They're now 2-0. I mean, everywhere he has gone, he's made them a winner.
Now, educate me, because again, I'm ignorant on this, and I apologize for being ignorant, but you'll educate me. Alcorn State, is that considered a historically black college?
Yep, home of Steve Abagnale.
Yes. if I first came into contact with Steve McNair, with the cover of Sports Illustrated, I want to say it was 90, I can't remember the exact year, but it said, give him the Heisman. And I was growing up, I didn't understand the differences between certain levels of football. And I thought, if that guy is as good as he, as they make him out to be, why couldn't he be considered for the Heisman? And it turns out that he was better than what I thought he was.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I mean, literally changed the game at the quarterback position with his size, speed, his intelligence. I mean, his ability to read the field, lead people. You know, he was just a true competitor. You know, you hit him, he'd get up. I mean, he didn't know anything other than getting up off the turf when he got knocked down. So he was absolutely a phenomenal, phenomenal athlete.
Oh, and so you played offensive line for Howard, correct? What main position did you play?
Tackle, right tackle.
Right tackle. You at your biggest, you're playing weight. What was it?
In college or the pros?
Well, college. Let's go with college
about,
right now.
About 330.
Was that a pretty good size for Howard or for the level that you were on, or is that
considered? I mean, I was bigger than most guys that play at that position, Howard, across the conference. Most guys were like 300, 310, but I was also almost like 6'5 and a half, 6'6. I could get away with that. Now it's interesting, inside going to guard, guys were a lot heavier, 340, sometimes 350. Like I had a guy on my team who was a guard, my good friend Diggs and Corey Brown. I was 6'8", 360. I played guard. So, I mean, I was very big for my size at tackle, but I also was very athletic. I could move well. I could pass block well, which helped me be able to kind of, you know, be able to, you know, get a shot playing in the NFL.
So your size and your athletic ability translated, like I said, to get 6th-round pick out of Howard to go to the mm-hmm. Jaguars.
Mm-hmm.
And what year was that?
2003, Jack Del Rio's first year as a head coach.
I know you will get it. He is one of the most underrated coaches that I've ever seen. The guy was a good coach.
Oh man, he got a raw deal in Jacksonville at the end. I mean, great guy. Unfortunately, back then, the ownership and some of the people in the front office were not as innovative as Shaheed Khan is now, which is yeah. why the Jaguars are winning. I will give credit to Doug Peterson. I was not happy. I wanted Byron to get that job and get that position. But unfortunately, Byron wanted to have Adrian Wilson come with him, which I understand, you know, as a general manager, and they weren't going to do that. So he gave it to Doug Peterson. I will be the first to say Doug has done a phenomenal job with that team. I'm very excited about where they're going. Trevor Lawrence is making some moves. I wonder when they're going to give him an extension. I don't know what that's going to look like because, I mean, Joe Burrow's got that huge one for 275. Golly. And then he ended up, you know, having a quote, but he's had historically bad first games last few years. So, and you know what, though? I don't blame him, man. It's hard to throw the football when you're getting the crap knocked out of you. So I get it. But I wonder what they're going to do with Trevor Lawrence, man. I mean, they're going to have to. I mean, it's going to be after this year, it's going to be time to pay him. You know what I mean? Like, you got to bite the bullet.
Do you think that there's going to be a cap one day on the price that you could pay a quarterback? Because that eats up. I mean, I don't know what
that's going to happen. But you know what? I always say I would think so, but I don't know because TV money keeps going up. Like, you know, Prime's now getting involved and this thing called Fubo or whatever, you can watch football 24/7 on this station. I mean, you can watch it on, you know, anywhere. You can stream it. I mean, I saw every major television station that broadcasts football. Everybody's making at least $2.1 billion or you know, bringing in at least $2.1 billion in gross revenue. At least. That was the low. I think I saw some highs like $3.4 billion. So, I mean, yeah. I mean, what's $275 million, right, of $3.4 billion? And that's just one. That's if you combine them all, it's close to like what? Almost $30 billion. So what's $275 million? When you know the owners are getting a cut of that and splitting it equally. So, and that doesn't include the stadium, tickets, merchandise, food is like charged. It's like, you know, that's 200% overpriced. You know, I'm going to the Jaguar 49ers game as part of the Jaguar Legends, day for like retired players, stuff like that. And I'm like, man, I already know I'm going to spend at least $200, if not more, on, well, maybe not, because we'll get some free food, I hope. But I'm like, man, like food in the stadium and all that stuff, man, it's going to be all hyped up.
Yeah. I took my kids. You saw one of them. She came in here just a second ago, and she wanted hot chocolate. That's $10.
Well, and a whole box of it probably costs like $3 to buy like a whole box of that. And so you're making what, 10? I mean, but they know they can get it because you're at the stadium and you're going to get hungry. And you know, I don't even want to know what beer is. I don't even want to know what beer is.
I have seen, of course, watching Titans games before recently, before Derrick Henry, really, I have seen so many people get drunk at games, and you know, I understand that's the only way to watch a Titans game, but they're like $15 a drink, and Nashville is low.
Yeah, because you got to think New York's high, Dallas is stupid high, Miami's high, Washington's high, Baltimore's high. Yeah, I mean, now because they're winning, Cincinnati, it's spiked. LA's always high. Vegas is always high, you know?
And we pay it. And I was like, guys, if you're going to get drunk before you come to the game. Go get you a 12-pack.
Yeah, I mean, you get that for like, what, like $8 versus going to spend like damn near $200 to get 8 beers at the game and then being mad when you get home. Like, why did I spend that kind of money?
So you played for what, 6 years? You played for Jacksonville, then you went to Buffalo.
Baltimore.
Okay, Baltimore. Then you went to Buffalo, and then you went to Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Fan-wise, during what is it, 06 or 07, you were in Tennessee. Yeah, the fans, 06, 07. Yeah, fans have gotten better over the year with Tennessee. But out of the three, let me make a guess that Buffalo had the most fanatic fans.
No, Baltimore.
Oh, Baltimore.
Because at that time, Buffalo was struggling. Bills Mafia existed, but it wasn't as loud and aggressive as they are today.
Nice. It's always been there, hasn't it? Just not like it is now.
But they weren't like they again. Because again, early '90s, they was all gung ho. Then from like after losing all four Super Bowls in a row, it went cold for years as far as, being, winning and getting to that next level and playoffs. So by the time I was there, it got really cold. Great teammates. I mean, oh, man, I played with great guys. Willis McGahee, Sam Adams, Chris Kelce, Ryan Dennehy, London Fletcher, Eric Moles, Lee Evans, Jeff Posey. I mean, Jason Peters, who actually just got signed today by the Seahawks.
London Fletcher, I love watching him play. He was never flashy, but he was there every game. London Fletcher, you played with Willis McGahee, and if I remember, the first thing about Willis McGahee was that championship game where he broke his leg. Was it or tore something in his leg?
Tore his ACL.
Yeah, and they said he's not going to amount to anything. Well, he did.
He got drafted in the first round that year by the Bills. They took him in the first round after that injury.
They made a good decision. Willis McGahee.
Oh man, Willis was great. Willis was great, man. Willis was awesome. I mean, Nate Hobbs, corner out of Ohio State, great. Yeah. I played with pretty boy Lori Malloy, who was a Lori could hit boy, man. He could hit, buddy. But we call him Pretty Boy Lawyer, man.
He was one of the guys that I watched him hit, and he borderline dirty every time, and I would not want to be over the middle getting hit by him.
Oh no, he played the game aggressively. You know, I wouldn't call him dirty. I would call Rodney Harrison dirty. Harrison was dirty. Lori Malloy would hit you in the mouth in between the whistle, and it'd be a good stop shot. Rodney Harrison would do anything he could after the whistle to kind of get you mad and upset, and like he tried to take a dirty shot at any chance he would get.
So you would be able to be an offensive line. You'd be able to handle somebody who cleanly hit you, even though it's hard, compared to somebody who's dirty.
Of course. Oh yeah, hit me hard all day. If you're dirty, I remember I got into a fight with Edgerton Hartwell in practice. I was playing for Baltimore. He gave me a dirty hit after the play. I said, Edgerton, I'm gonna tell you one last time, man. If you hit me again after the whistle and you try to touch me when we're done, we're gonna have a problem. Like in between the whistle, we're good. After whistle, you try to touch me, you try to get under my skin, it's gonna be a problem. I'm warning you, that's it. The next play, we were done, the whistle blew, I was finished blocking him. He gave him an extra shove underneath the chin. Nope, I went straight in after him and we went to a war. And then you saw me, I was in, of course, I started it. Well, edge of star, I finished it. Then you had my brother run over, 6'9", 375. You had Benny Anderson, who played for Buffalo, 6'6", 340, 350 at guard. You had Orlando Brown, 6'7", like 420, run over. You had Edwin Mulatalo, like 6'4", 350. And it was just like this whole mass of offensive linemen running over to the pile, right? But again, I told Edgerton, man, don't touch me after the whistle. That's not, we don't do that here. You know what I'm saying? Like, just right. Put your hands off me. And he had to learn.
you were naming some names. By the way, and again, I don't want to hearken your brother because, you know, I want to talk with you, but I remember watching the draft when your brother got drafted. He did not look that big. He was, he did not, how much did he weigh at that time? Because he looked thin as a rail.
When he got drafted, he was probably about 310, 315, but he was also 6'9".
Yeah, he held it.
He put up on a lot of weight, after that. So
he carried it a lot better than most people do.
Oh yeah, then he got to about 375 in his career.
Did you struggle with weight?
No, I mean, I got 375 in my career when I moved into guard.
So you were able to put it on. I read like you had to eat a lot of offensive linemen.
I ate a lot coming out of college. I couldn't keep it on trying to get drafted. I struggled to stay at 300 pounds when I was trying to get drafted. I ate like 12,000 calories a day.
Good gracious. Did you, how hard was it to stop doing that when your career ended?
It wasn't hard. The thing for me was hard to stop thing like the drinking and the partying because you're like, oh, you kind of get used to that lifestyle. And, you know, you're out with the women, the fast, this, the nightlife, this, that, and the other. And like, I wasn't married at the time in the NFL. I didn't get married until I turned 35. And I'm actually divorced now. And so during my NFL career, it was just hanging out. I do my job, work, but I was like, you know, young, stupid, partying, you know, all the things you shouldn't really be doing.
But now you, so Buffalo, how cold was it up there? I've never been that far north.
Oh, it's unreal. It's unreal.
And I you're North Carolina, Washington, D.C., Virginia?
D.C. No, I don't know. So I lived in Washington, D.C., then Jacksonville, then Buffalo, sorry, then Baltimore, then Buffalo, then Nashville. Then I moved back to Baltimore. Now I'm outside of Raleigh.
So you're about the same time temperature zone. It doesn't get too cold in this area, but you go to Buffalo. I bet you that was a wake-up call.
Oh, my God, yes. Funny thing is my father's from Buffalo.
Really?
Born in Baxley, Georgia, raised in Buffalo. Yep.
So tell me, I love when I was younger and I could do it, I would love playing football out in the snow. You know, tackle, get hit, you catch the ball, you hurt. How hard was it to play in that type of cold?
Oh, man, it's unreal because when you hit the ground, it's cold, it's hard. You know, because we had like, you know, we had it wasn't the synthetic grass that it is today.
Yeah.
So that was hard and cold. The stadiums were cold. The wind would blow. You know, the stadium really wasn't set up to like handle all the cold that was blowing in. So it was really, really a lot in that regard. You know what I mean? A lot.
Well, I'm hoping that they get you. What I hate about that is the new stadium that it looks like they're getting is going to be a dome.
Yeah, that makes sense. The weather. I mean, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Thurman Thomas didn't play in a dome. Andre Reed didn't play in a dome. Daryl Talley didn't play.
I love all those guys, but they didn't win a Super Bowl either. So, there's nothing wrong with making a change.
Well, maybe it'll good. Of course, they didn't ask my opinion on any of that, Marcus. Let me ask you, Chris. I tell people I don't pay for Zoom. I refuse to pay for Zoom, and they're giving me a countdown now. What are you doing now?
I am an inspirational keynote speaker, executive coach, business consultant, brand ambassador. I have my own podcast, Get Authentic with Marcus Ogden. I'm also a business owner in businesses like Grind Oral Care. We are a toothpaste brand that's in 455 Walmarts across the country. People like celebrity chef Andre Rush are partners in our business. We're really doing well in that regard. I'm a part owner of Adult Real ID. We help protect young children. I saw you have a daughter. I have a 9-year-old myself, from predatory activity, catfishing, all kind of stuff. I'm really big on that because, that's a serious problem in the world. And so we actually have universities right now, like Texas A&M, bought for all their students to subscribe, Princeton, Rutgers. We're talking now to BYU, Utah State University. And it's starting to really become an epidemic because it's a way to create protection for your children, for people in general, online dating. I just found out Uber and Lyft don't do background checks on who they hire. I just found that out like 10 minutes ago. Well, 20 minutes ago, right before this podcast. They don't do background checks.
So you would think that they would do that.
Austin has banned Uber and Lyft from what I was told. I don't know how factual that is. I haven't checked it yet, but that's what I was told. I was like, wow. Like, I hope that's not true. I hope that they do background checks. I do hope they do. I really do. But if they don't, man, and so if that's the case, Austin has banned them. I was told by somebody else this afternoon that Austin has banned Uber and Lyft in their area. So what would be great is people like that partnering with us to help bring an extra layer of protection to people that are getting into an Uber or traveling, or if you're on, I'm divorced, right? I was on online dating. I was on like Tinder and Zusk and all these things. And, I got so many women like, okay, former NFL, I didn't say that, but okay, well, own a business, you take care of yourself, you're a good looking guy, you can't be real. You can't be real. I'm like, why not? Well, I don't know. I don't trust it. Can we FaceTime? Sure. I got no problem with that. But, oh, you are real. So I don't blame them. So many women I was meeting on these apps were saying, well, how do I know you're you? And I get it, right? So Adult Real ID is all about making people feel safe and secure. So I'm part owner in that. And I do a lot of speaking, coaching, consulting. And of course, we have our podcast, Get Authentic with Marcus Ogden. It's in the top 1% most popular podcast worldwide. We're also, which you're interested in too, right, Jeremy, is launching a cohort program on branding, how to get on speaking stages, and how to grow and monetize your podcast.
Yeah. Can you send me all this information so I can put it in the show notes, everything?
Of course. Yeah. I mean, the best thing people can do is, easiest way, is go to Marcus360.com, Marcus360.com, or, right, Jeremy, just download our app. Go on your Apple phone or your Android phone, type in on the App Store, Marcus Ogden. It'll pop right up. Hit subscribe. You can stay up to on our website, exclusive content, our podcast, how to connect with us. The app is a great way to be able to get, bam, information right in your hand.
Well, there it is. I have just downloaded it.
Yeah, man. It's we're all about positivity. We're all about helping people, and we're all about encouragement.
All right. Well, I've got about a minute before it kicks me, and I don't want you to think I'm just left you hanging. So thank you for coming on. If you could, just a minute, give us something positive. This podcast is about positivity. Give us something positive that we can leave people with.
In times of extreme darkness, focus on the light. Aristotle. Aristotle meant we are the light to blaze our own trail. We are the light to move forward. And we have to do that in order to get going where we want to go. But we have to have strength, courage, and self-confidence to push through our adversity. are obstacles to get where they need to go. So in times of extreme darkness, focus on the light.
Thank you. This was awesome. And can you do a favor before we leave? Can you tell me, can you say tighten up? I got to hear it.
Tighten up. No, I got a problem with that. I played for tighten up. Hey, man, Jeff Fisher was a great coach. I mean, I didn't play for any bad coaches. I mean, I had Mike Munchak as an O-line coach, phenomenal. I had Jim McNally. I was blessed, man, to play for some great coaches at my position and my head coach. I didn't have a bad position coach or a bad head coach in my NFL career. Not one.
Mike Munchak, that dude is insanely good at what he did.
Oh, my God.
Thank you, Marcus, for coming on.
Appreciate you, sir. Thanks for having me on.
And thank y'all for listening.
Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
The Pigskin Tales podcast is all about the lesser-known pro football players. Yes, there are stories about the ones we know, like Brad Tarkenton and Harold Red Grange. But have you ever heard of Ernie Nevers? How about Dave Osborne or even Grady Alderman? These men created their own path to the NFL. How did they do it? Listen to the Pigskin Tales podcast, now streaming on your favorite music platform. Go to pigskintales.com.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.